You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. Dwayne.
Hello.
Niall.
I have a computer.
And me, Brian. Yes, this is the week where I wished I'd watched the episode of Twin Peaks before we recorded last week's podcast, then I could have got in my parody of the end of that, like everybody else has done this week. But it's too late now. So we are talking about the anime from the 26th of July all the way up to the 2nd of July, with a single exception of Bono Bono, of which we are still currently roughly 13 weeks behind.
Yep, we're starting season two.
Well, actually, given how little things we're going to be able to watch, there may be a bumper episode of Bono Bono's catch up coming soon.
Bono Bono Bonanza.
This could have been the week, actually, but
maybe, yeah. Because
even things we're following didn't air. Never mind. But first up, Shonen Ishibe, Go Go Gamachan, episode 43 even. The Seal Returns a Favor, which we get a parody of The Crane Returns a Favor. A story I think I'm only aware of through parodies of it in that other anime.
Is it an Aesop's Fable or something just like that?
Something along those lines. It's like a crane returns a favor, and it basically plays out pretty much like this, but with less drunken dads pretending to be seals.
It's less good then, isn't it?
Yeah. I think in some versions of the story that Crane turns out to be, or a beautiful lady to Adipity Crane, and a guy gets married to her, and then
It was probably just
happy it didn't happen this instance.
It's probably just got sprung up from a guy who was caught fucking a crane. He was going, oh, I swear, it was a beautiful woman.
Illusion. I was fooled.
The crane did me a favor, and I was doing the crane a favor. Yeah.
What goes around comes around.
Now, I missed why was Gamachan having all these fantasies where he was getting annoyed at people? Because I think I missed the start of this episode.
Because he was stuck in a drain. At the very start of the episode, he was just his tail sticking out of like a drain in the road. And then this rando, like I assume it's one of their neighbors or something, finds him. And that's what starts the whole thing of favors. Mm. But Goma has it in his head while he's trapped in the drain and going mad that everyone's at home eating an entire tuna and like a big fucking wad of ice creams. And it's like, let's eat them all without Goma. That's right. Let's do it. I think, well, how little he fucking, you shouldn't doubt Ishibe at this stage. He's the nicest boy.
Yes. And it seems to be implied as well that, well, the fish is here. We could have fished some ice cream. We don't need Gamachan to eat ice. We'll give the fish Gamachan share. That's right. It's like, no, I'm the only aquatic creature in your household deserving of your love. Bastards, I'll get you.
Yeah, and he just got it into his head that Ishibe is a little shit eating all his ice cream and tuna. Yeah.
So this guy, their neighbor, brings Gamachan back home, and
I think it's a favor the dad just brings over like some treats or something.
Yeah, I think that's it, yes.
It's just like a present, like a cake or something.
And then the guy's son has been reading The Crane Returns a Favor and thinks that Ishibe's dad is this seal returning the favor.
He keeps mixing him up between a seal and a crane, so he's obviously like a young kid or whatever.
Yes. Yeah. He's a pretty good, annoying, hyper kid who's got one thing stuck in his mind. And therefore,
I like the way the parents are like, no, shush, shush, shush. And then Ishibe's dad is obviously like, oh yeah, I'm fucking going to play into this.
No, I'm a seal. Q.
Except in his kew, fucking weird old man voice.
And so he fixes their door, and then they like invite him to stay for dinner. And he's going to go away, and the kid goes, oh no, you've got to return the favor to the seal. And so he goes, oh, okay, I'll stay, and then gets really drunk. Eating their food, drinking their beer.
And at that stage, the mother isn't like amused or kind of like, oh, be quiet, honey. You're like, oh dear, be quiet. She's just getting annoyed. She's like, why doesn't this fucker go back home? dear.
And does he return home with food at that point?
He does. They give him like a plate of
And then we get another one of Gomma's fantasies about how they're going to keep all this leftovers to themselves and not give Gamachan any.
The Steeler will swear vengeance.
And then he spots the kids wanting to use a seesaw and these other kids not letting him. So he decides he'll go around again and he'll build them a seesaw. Which he does. Then Ishibei and Gomachan show up and they have a go at the seesaw. They dress Gomachan up in the dad's coat.
To further convince the kid that the world isn't the way you think it is.
Ishibei catapults Gomachan into the air.
Hmm. He likes that though. We've known that from the rainy day one.
Yes. He lands on the ground. They come out and see what's happening. They hear him cue when he lands on the ground. They come out and yes, the dad's now turned into a seal. So he really has returned the favor with this seesaw. I think that's it for this episode.
That's pretty much it. Yeah.
And then meanwhile in Aspic Hall, terror awaits. I think it's like, the teacher is walking along the edge of the lake, and is it a crab or a fish he picks up?
No, it's a tadpole.
Yeah,
tadpole. It's like a tadpole. Yeah,
I think it's like a young catfish because of the thing.
Yeah,
which...
actually, yeah, you might be right. It's whatever. I forgot what the baby fish is called.
He picks it up. He's getting looks at Seagal coming as well. What? I'm not going to eat it.
He says with chopsticks in his other fucking hand.
The giant fish swallows him. So no, I wasn't going to eat it. No, don't eat me.
Well, I think he asked the mother fish for, okay, if you're going to pay me back in food or money. And he thinks the fish thought he was supposed to be the food or something. And he dies yet again. Good, because he's an asshole.
But Seagal will still cry for him, even when he's eaten by a giant fish.
Well, he has to put up with this fucking existential horror every fucking day. Poor kid.
This was another good episode of Go Go Gomachan. It's thoroughly consistent, I would say, both in tone and animation.
I kind of like having an episode centered around Dad, because he's usually just the sort of side character.
Yeah, it must be similar to the same thing they had with the episode centered around the mam.
And it feels like these neighbors could also be recurring characters if they need a child younger than Ishibei ever again for a plot point.
Yeah, yeah.
Or parents a little bit younger than Ishibei's dad and mum, who I now assume are actually younger than me, probably even maybe around your age.
Yeah. Oh dear, yes, I'm old.
Yeah. The point at which you start being older than cartoon dads.
That's a bad way to be, yeah.
Actually, did you guys see there was putting out a spin-off manga about Ishibei and Seagal, but in high school?
Really?
Like, no! Defeats the point of the whole premise.
I think they may have done something like that before, so I don't think it's an entirely fresh thing. I think it's just with a different artist doing it this time around.
Yeah. Hmm. Also, how long do seals live for? Was, depending on what the number is, that means poor Gomachan is long since dead.
Or it could be like a fully grown seal and just not cute at all. I mean, as cute as a fully grown seal is. Yeah.
Well, we'll get to the age of cartoon characters. Oh, seals apparently live 30 years, so it's fine.
Oh, it's grand.
Oh, they're fine then. what he used to be one 16, 17 years old, still bringing his fucking seal to him to high school.
Yeah, but now it's a fully grown leopard seal.
Now we'll go and dissect it.
Right, talking of existential horror, 100% Teacher Pascal, episode 12. How to Raise a Pascal Jr., Perfect Plate, and Pascal English Straight Out of America. So, How to Raise a Pascal Jr., our first bit of real continuity. We've had the Super Pascal before, so I think there is.
There's been continuity before,
but this one picks up.
But this
up.
Is leading directly, from the last episode.
So, Pascal has brought one of the aliens back and apparently named it Pascal Jr. and is raising it as his own child.
Mm.
And he raises it very well, because by...
It learns too quickly.
Third period, it's principal of the school.
progressing slowly up the way through the ranks.
Slowly? And,
I mean, slowly. I mean, it has to take a period to learn, Japanese and that kind of thing.
Yes.
Or does it learn English?
One class away. That's faster than an iPhone computer would learn.
And of course, the crazy thing of this is it's at that point, it starts getting strange.
At that point, it's not the principal and Pascal about shaking their fists furiously, taking our jobs.
Yes.
It's Pascal has brought the manual for it from the moon, which is a stone tablet that makes words appear of what you shouldn't do. Kind of like some kind of gremlin type rules or something.
Yes. Wait, it only says why you shouldn't do that after you've done this.
Yeah, it only explains afterwards why you shouldn't have done that thing. What's the first thing? Don't fart.
Don't fart, yes.
Yeah. And which was my least favorite joke, because fart jokes.
It was one of my favorite jokes.
I figured it would be.
Fart jokes. It's good because it's the person you think. So Pascal doesn't decide he can't bring himself to fart at his own child.
Because it might kill him.
And then your girl lead is like, oh no, everyone's trying not to fart and I really need to let out a fart. And then someone lets out.
Like the point where they go, like, the lunch is like the perfect food for farting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Then Robot Coon. Yes. Farts somehow. His exhaust port.
And that causes him to stop being the principal and become two smaller delinquents.
Yes.
Right. Okay. I'm trying to remember the order of fucking insanity.
If you take a photo of them, their bodies will change into the bodies of models.
Yep. And divide in two again.
Yes.
Yeah. So there's four models with different colored scarves and they're just weirdly, everyone's creeping out by their, like, how lanky they are. And I was kind of like that way too. I was like, yeah, that doesn't look right.
But the male,
like human proportioned?
Yes. But the male lead is like, this is good. Stop here. These are fine. These are much better than delinquents.
Let's cut our losses and just go stick with this for a second. But wild nesting makes him better. And then just transform.
I'm
going to
keep rolling the bones.
Turns him into eight sort of balding men wearing vests.
Oh, it's four balding men wearing vests. And then she lets out a fart and they turn into eight balding men.
Oh, yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Also, I think it was the same balding guy where Pascal was remembering fondly the time he spent with his son, Pascal
yes,
Jr.
it was.
And there was randomly a picture of an old man in his memory. Yeah.
Yes. And then the episode ended with everyone wondering who farted. And then I should really learn these characters' names. She apologized as she was circled out. Zoom in. Okay, that was that part. Then Perfect Plate also got really strange.
Yes. And it wasn't him being a crayfish that was the strange part. Or it kind of was.
It was Demon Pascal Dark.
Yeah.
Was exalting his demonic form when 100% Teacher Pascal wandered into the Perfect Plate universe trying to catch a crayfish.
Thinking that your man was because he has an exoskeleton and claws and a tail now, so.
Yes.
Yeah.
He tries to deny that he's a crayfish, but further evidence proves that he is a crayfish, and he goes and lives out his crayfish existence happily.
Like, hey man, there's no shame in being a crayfish. Be proud of who you are. And he's like, thank you, Teacher Pascal. I will live as a crayfish now. The end?
I don't know.
At least for him, I think. I assume it will carry on next week. But yeah, it really did. It was a surprise. It was a genuine surprise after 11 episodes where this universe appeared disconnected from the first part.
Is Pascal World the regular world we've been looking at the entire fucking time?
Possibly.
Right, okay.
Did we find that weird? Because the just show, you know, as a matter of fact, is just weird all the way through. So something like this didn't really throw me as much as it
did. I just thought it was a different, like, setting for the whole thing. You know? Like, it was nearly like a B show. But apparently, no, it's exactly the same show. I don't know why I thought this. It's still Pascal playing all the guys. Maybe it's the different voice actors.
I think it's the different voices, yes.
Yeah.
And the fact this bit is specifically designed to sell some sort of barcode battler type game.
Right.
Which I think Penguin's Troubles had the same thing, where they were super deformed, armored penguins doing different wacky stuff.
Right.
But here we've got whatever Pascal doing it. And then we get Pascal English straight out of America, where we have another, here is an English phrase, but if you say it a certain way, it forms an hilarious pun in Japanese.
You gotta love puns.
Even if, at least this one pretty much explains it. I don't know what's going on with the hieroglyphics thing at all.
Yeah, that's true.
You have a computer was the phrase.
You have a computer. No.
Sounds like
you have a computer.
It sounds like calabash is for dinner or something.
Something like that, yes.
Yeah. And a hilarious picture accompanying that, obviously.
Yes, and so DiCaprio gets more and more annoyed until he eventually says it the way Pascal says it, and then has the food stuffed down his throat as well. The end. See you next week.
Yeah, I think this worked better, you know, even if you don't know what the point is, because it's just everything phrased being said repeatedly in a strange way.
Yes.
You know. Yeah.
And after, you know, kind of more Steve doing it all the time as well, you kind of ingrained in you as a result.
Oh, we forgot the. We needed Dwayne's opinion on the Calamari Steve joke in the first part. You don't like fart jokes. How do you like shitting yourself jokes?
I'm also not gone on those. I was really worried that was going to happen the entire time, because that's like a standard fart, lots of fart joke setup. It's like, I'm really going to fart. And it's like, no, he shits himself.
Yeah, I was like, I can't. I was going that same direction, but I was like, surely they wouldn't. Surely they wouldn't. Oh, they did.
I wouldn't put it fucking past them. And I was fucking right to that.
And then I thought of you, Dwayne. I thought, Dwayne's going to love that joke.
You were wrong.
Gripping your arms on a couch, just baring his teeth.
No, please, just get the fart joke portion over of the episode. God.
There was significantly less fart jokes in Bono Bono. And yeah. Wolverine didn't shit anywhere either, so you were cleared on that point.
Well, it was Wolverine's dad, he was much more well-mannered.
Yeah.
Yeah, so episode 1 of season 2, Raccoon is Bald, in which a character who we have never seen before is casually mentioned and observed with no explanation.
I like the fact that he keeps freaking out that it's that guy, but we don't know who that guy is. It's like, oh my god, it's him! Ah! That seems to be the joke of it. I'm not entirely understanding.
Apparently that's that character's very first appearance in animation, possibly.
That might be the joke then.
He wasn't in the previous two series. Though he did have another... The character list on Wikipedia lists 5 different actors' slots for the various characters. So apparently that character has been voiced by Kappa Yamaguchi at some point. But I didn't figure out which one it was.
And the guy, there's nothing specific about him. He kind of looks like an off-model Bono.
He's apparently like some sort of mountain beaver.
Okay.
As best I could understand from my Google Translated wiki page. And his thing is pulling faces until some point apparently in the comic where his personality does a complete flip and he does something else instead. But
yeah, and this is just Raccoon looking at him, picturing him pulling faces in his mind. But instead, he's just sitting at a tree looking at his hands, looking lonely.
What have I done?
So, yes, this episode is mainly Raccoon talking to us, the audience.
Actually a really good long setup, I think, as well.
Yeah, particularly once the bit of the cut where it then cuts away for him just talking to facing off in the distance,
because
talking
to no one.
He turns
to the camera, it's like, you might be thinking I'd do this, but this is how I do it. And then it's like, I'm talking to myself, am I lonely? And it kind of turns around, there's no one there, there's no camera there. He's like, yeah, I guess I'm pretty lonely.
Am I going crazy?
Yeah. He likes observing adults doing stuff it turns out to be all the adults doing stuff without them knowing that he's there. He doesn't introduce himself or anything.
And then imagining how lonely they must be if they're alone. Yeah. They must be really lonely. And then eventually he runs into Fenny, who he thinks is also lonely, but turns out Fenny's playing a game with Bono Bono and Chipmunk.
Yeah, they were there the whole time. They were just playing hide and seek, so you couldn't tell they weren't alone.
Then he gets annoyed at that, but then he said, well, okay, would you want to play with us then? It's like, yeah, right, I suppose. Let's go.
I feel like there's something deep here. I'm trying to mine it.
It's because someone's alone doesn't mean that they're unhappy, you know?
Yes.
They're just, like, you know, just happy in their own company.
Mm.
It's like, you know, people who have I believe it's referred to resting bitch face for a note, even though that's just their face. They're not angry. They're not like angry or disappointed or anything. It's just the way their face kind of looks.
Yeah, I've had trouble with that.
Doesn't mean that they're just like angry or displeased with you. It's just the way they are.
Mm.
For example.
Yeah, this was okay, but I've seen the next episode, and the next episode is great because it's a payoff of an episode
I know,
deep into
I'm really
the last
excited.
Season.
I saw the preview and I was like, oh, I want to watch it now. I know I can, but I'm not going to.
Next up, we got Ninja Girl and Samurai Master, episode 39, A Dangerous and Powerful Attack. Boy, a lot of history starts to happen in this episode.
Oh, God, I'm trying to think of all the the various things. I think, like, two castles get taken or something?
Yeah, pretty much. The combined Nobunaga-Tokugawa army of this steamrolling over the Asakura territory.
Or is he waiting?
Or is he? When in reality, Asakura is actually kind of lying in wait. He's kind of reached out to the Azai province, which is what Nobunaga's sister is married off to?
Yes.
Yeah. And they're going to catch him out in a pincer movement. But then cut to, like, Chidori and Suke, who are trying to, like, you know, knock on the door to Azai to, you know, check in on Oichi, who is... Oichi, that's it.
Yeah. Mm. And, yeah, we meet her youngest daughter, who her husband's using for weightlifting. Apparently, they don't...
Kind of putting a Mr. Tender as well. It's like, oh, you come all this way to see my massive muscles, right? And fixes up his shirt.
I did not know that was a bit I would find funny on several different characters, but what do you know?
Well, fart jokes are out, yes. But, you know, guys fixing out their shirts is where you're at. You know,
it's always hilarious, yeah.
It's giant metric opposites of humor there.
I will say, yeah, Chidori runs into someone who seems familiar, and he's like, oh, yeah, I remember when I tried to assassinate Oda Nobunaga. That's where,
like,
you know me from.
Shouldn't have said that. I was like, don't worry about it. I think he's cool now.
But then...
Until the guy runs in and says, Nobunaga's invading the thing. Oh, fuck. No, counterattack.
Yeah, once he's been told, like, Nobunaga has invaded your allied state or whatever.
Yes, so... Yeah, so it'll be interesting. I think the interesting thing will be next week as we see how Chidori is going to deal with having to deal with people she likes going against the man she idolizes and works for.
Yeah, yeah. And maybe that's why she looks so sad in the opening credits.
There's a joke where they say, oh, you can't be a messenger, a young girl like you. So she only looks like a young girl because they haven't changed the character design.
Yeah.
She's that makes her a good ninja. She just seems like the way they are. Like, no, a good ninja didn't stand out. They just kind of looked like an average kind of person. So,
yeah. Or it's a nice segue into Haybot, episode 39, Queen Nagari returns. It simply says in the story Bible that she is permanently the age she was drawn as.
Okay.
Okay. At least they're admitting it. That's good. Yeah.
So, this episode, The Queen Returns. That is Nagarai Dotsuki, the fist-tastic mother of our hero Nejiri.
Fist-tastic?
Fist-tastic, yeah. She likes shoving the word fist in lots of things she says, because her main thing is muscles and punching. These are her two favourite things.
Hmm.
And she punches with her hair and her fists. Mainly with her hair though. Yes. Yeah, she's got four hair fists.
Oh, okay.
It opens up with the most dynamic animation you've ever seen yet in Haybot, as we get a flashback to the early heroes of her, the king, Aldis, who's the current screw king, and the screw monk we met much earlier on in the season. And they're fighting some sort of enemy, can't quite make out what it is. The Screw King in this past has a different voice. It has the Saturn Hag's voice, and there seems to be a different MC Screw as well. So, plot. But the bulk of the episode, you would think this character they've built up would be a big part of progressing the main plot forward. Nope, it's just a load of gags about a mother beating up her sons, trying to make them tougher. And as Haybot says, they built up her appearance so much, but she's just a muscle fetish character. And they explain, she claims that she's 18 years old, and then the other characters do the maths. 18 minus 11, so that means you had Nejiru when you were 7. Come on. And she claims she looks like the way she does without having to do any training, because it says in the story Bible that's what she looks like. So she doesn't have to.
Natasha, because she was kept in keeping herself fit and muscly, that she looked
just need to read how the setup for the show is.
Yes, so that explains
everything.
But then later she wanted to like introduce a muscle training regime and change Screw Island to Muscle Island. And they went, hang on a moment ago, you didn't do any training. What are you talking about? So they have a battle, which somehow the awesome Fine Screw wins, even though it wasn't involved in the battle. So nobody gets what they want at the end. Then the two future Nejirus are like, hang on a minute, that doesn't look anything like the mother I remember. And then the other one goes, I'm not sure I even remember having a mother. And they make some more comments about how this layer is a lot weirder than the other layers they went through.
Mm.
And then the girl who looks like the girl out the ring sort of comments on how she can't seem to remember something. Then it gets to the plot as we discover that outside of all of this, there appears to be some sort of council of gods observing the events of the series.
Right.
What, and they complain that, the girl from the very first episode had been trying to kill one of the avatars, which is like of the ring girl. As in, one of the gods looks like her, but with white hair and carrying a scythe. I think they're supposed to be the Roman gods, because I think there's like a comment about Neptune and the Saturn hags there. But some of these gods look like some of the weird random characters who appear in the background in the previous episodes.
Right.
Like the giant lizard woman who will appear occasionally is apparently one of these gods. And also one of the gods looks like the person who's supposedly the villain, but with a slightly different costume and character design. So
what happened to the whole alternate future? What's gap here? It seems to just
those characters showed up and
other.
Nothing happened.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, this is another layer. So the villain is the one who is apparently has got the guys who look like, who've got penises for noses and the guys who look like snot trying to decide whether they want to tighten the screw of reality or loosen the screw of reality.
Right.
And then appears to be this other layer on top of that of these godlike beings, some of whom we've seen and apparently have avatars within the reality of Haybot. So I've no idea where it's going. Just as you think, oh, this character will come in, there might be some explanation. Well, yeah, they explain stuff they haven't even talked about yet and add an extra layer to it. But it was pretty funny. This is probably the best animated episode of Haybot so far. The character of the mum is very funny. Well, as a great character design, she comes in. I think she auras the entire palace as her entrance after jumping out what I think is a ship from Gundam. It looked like it should be a ship from Gundam. So as it's Haybot, it probably was. But yeah, I am interested to see how they're going to tie all this together by the final episode. So I guess they've got 13 episodes left.
Do you think they will, or do you think they'll just keep adding stuff onto the pile?
I think they will.
Doesn't make any sense.
I think they will. From what I understand, the other weird stuff this guy's written, when he hasn't been writing Pokemon, has tied everything together by the end, albeit in a maybe like haphazardly in the last few episodes. We shall see.
I imagine he will. I mean, like, yes. it's like either some kind of long ongoing saga. This is a cartoon to sell like a toy, ostensibly.
Yes.
So. Doing like what all good toy cartoons do is that she will sell the toy, but also can do whatever the hell we want, really, yes. As long as you can market the toy and do stuff with it.
And also, apparently, this slot is no longer going to be for anime after Haybot finishes.
What a way to bow out.
It's now going to be for Lovecraftian stuff.
I think there's like some sort, I was vaguely reading on Twitter that there's some sort of shake up of Sunday morning TV on whatever channel Haybot airs. So that'll be Shake Up a Pretty Cure and Super Sentai and Kamen Rider as well.
So it's just like irradiated the slot that no one wants to touch it. We gotta change it all around now.
Possibly. Right, on to, well, I tell you what, I think we should end with Tiger Mask Double this week because that was the best thing we shared.
That's fair.
So let's go to Rage of Bahamut because there's no My Hero Academia.
on a break till next weekend.
Hopefully, with a, I imagine they'll change the intro at that stage, yeah?
Yeah,
the second half of the season. Mm.
And this was Farewell to Arms, was it called, this week's episode?
Yeah. Episode 13.
Now, this is the one which I may have pushed out my memories of it by playing 4 hours of Great Western Trail. But my main thing takeaway was that this was a good payoff to all various men trying to use Nina's powers for their own benefit or trying to stop her using her powers.
Yeah.
In that she decides to use her powers for herself.
Mm.
Uses the king to activate her powers, whether he wants to or not.
Yeah. She basically like demands that he helps her by giving her a hug.
Yeah. It's kind of nice how, like, you know, when there's like, nothing there now, like, when it's purely a physical thing with me right now. I kind of hate you right now, but
yeah,
I'm going to try and kind of.
But you're still hot. Like,
I'm going to try and tune that out and just kind of give in to my lustful instincts here and just kind of for the greater good. And then she does so.
Mm. So, yeah, that was a really good, like you said, a really good payoff to people trying to use her for various ends. And this was after the, I forgot what the weapon is called after they use it.
I can't remember either.
I've forgotten what it was.
Because the angels explicitly say what the fuck it's called. Or
it's
angels.
It's basically
gods,
like a magic space laser and it just shoots down heaven's flying saucer. And they're getting like heaven and stuff that fuck, we're in over our heads here. The weapon is some kind of thing that is spoken of, you know, in hushed tones of being this dreadful power that humans have now, like, unearthed again. So.
Yeah, as soon as the main god sees it, it's like, oh, fuck, they got that. We got to get out of here.
Dromos.
Like, that's basically her first reaction.
That's it.
Right.
I looked at my Google searches for Friday, and I was like... I was like, is there a card for that in the game? Is it?
I was thinking of that. Is like a super powerful, like... extra rare monster card.
No, it doesn't appear to be.
It's probably banned.
Yeah, it looks like something just for the show.
It's kind of nice the way besides the swirling mass it made the last episode, the king, by activating it, he's controlling it with his hand, and he basically like formed like a giant hand.
Yes.
But it looked really alien and everything and how it moved. It was just kind of like twitchy and just forming itself out of little parts of the device.
Yeah, like, it was trying to form some kind of like physical body there, and
then
reverted to hand mode, and then kind of just reverted back to its kind of resting sphere type of job.
And then later on, after he's hugging Nina, and his hand pulls away after that, we see that his arm around the amulet he's wearing is starting to turn green.
Yeah, it's kind of unexpected.
And he's not lost the eye, it's just gone grey, like it's blind.
Oh yeah, like he got hit so hard by a flying Nina, and it's just this fun, like, just fucked his eye up really bad. That's kind
I
of
thought
that
was
light.
Part of using the thing, the
I don't know.
Device, but...
Yeah,
because it was light coming out of that eye or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, see, I thought the same as Niall initially, and then I wasn't sure after the fact.
I wasn't sure, because this show like, does like a good line, that's like... injuries and fighting have consequences. I mean, Kaiser lost his arm last series, and fucking Favreau lost his fucking leg. He's still going on with the peg leg here, like.
Yeah, Favreau drops out the episode, literally.
Like, yeah, he zooms off. It seemed like Nina was gone at that stage as well, but everyone's like, should we go back for Favreau? It's like, oh, where? He just flew off into the sky with the explosions and shit that was going on. Yeah.
And then, Kaiser lets the women get away by pulling a Favreau, literally doing a thing Favreau has done before.
Yeah.
It was really fucking cool where he just like, all the guards kind of surround him and he drops the sword and then he has a big grin on his face and they all just beat the crap out of him. But he's just like, I did it. And then gets his ass immediately.
I'm hero blood.
Oh dear.
And yeah, so tries, where, yeah, basically they decide to, the gods want to retreat, but El doesn't, so they get hit. And also,
El gets like directly hit by the weapon.
And the angels who've got outside to attack also don't, they basically just throw themselves like flies, windscreen at the barrier.
Yeah. And then there's somebody then get kind of finished off by the remainder of the royal army.
Yeah.
Now, was Jean d'Arc like getting like a vision of stabbing Elle in the chest herself, or was that some kind of memory? I couldn't quite parse what was happening.
Yeah,
there.
I wasn't entirely sure of that myself. What those images were.
Yeah, because she was like saying, Elle is in danger. Like, this has to be stopped, or my child will be killed. But then she has some kind of vision or kind of picture in her head of stabbing Elle in the chest herself, it looks like. So I'm wondering what's happening there. It's probably, you know, because she's like a saint, maybe, you know, has receives like, you know, oracles from the gods. Maybe there was some kind of possible future. Elle will go too far the other way, and there's no recourse but for John to finish him off herself.
That's what I was thinking, especially in this episode where the gods are like sounding like a full retreat, and Elle's like, "We ain't fucking withdrawn. I ain't got my man back yet."
Yeah, and also at the end, Jean wanting to find a way to get to the land of the gods, so they're going to go back home to Nina's home because there's an old lady who might know. And then Rita says, "Okay, you two deal with that. I'm going to have to rescue those boys."
Jumping out of the hippogriff car.
Again.
Cleaning up this mess. All over, Ryan.
But yeah, it'd be nice, you know? She's probably one of the most effective characters in the show.
Well, she has got...
She saves Nina. She saves...
everybody.
Nina. She saves... who's in this episode? She jumps in and it's like, "Who the hell are you?" It's like, "Oh, no, she saved Nina."
Yes.
Because when Nina stops being a dragon, and "Who the hell are you?" It's like, "I'm just a random passing zombie. Pay no attention to me."
Shouldn't grab naked women when they're unconscious.
Yeah.
OJ pulls a sword and it's like, one Rita's like going, dude, get the fuck back with her umbrella. "You want some of this? You want some of this? You can't handle this."
Yeah. Good stuff.
Yeah. Interesting to see where it goes next. Because obviously it doesn't really give you much of a clue in the previews.
No.
Everyone's going, "Where is Favreau?" Whenever he's not on screen.
Because this feels like the first time the main characters will have been fairly geographically separated for the entire series. Even though we didn't know where Favreau was, turned out he was right under our nose for all those episodes he was missing. But now you've got Nina and Jean actually leaving the city.
Yeah, it's before, like, you didn't know the full structure, but once you understand it, you kind of get where things were and how they went down and why they went down. Whereas now it's like, I don't know where it's going to go from there. Yeah.
Yeah.
It'd be nice to have the two of them like on the road, though. You know, their kind of burgeoning friendship is going to kind of, you know, continue on outside the confines of prison.
Yeah.
And we should say the fight as Nina as a dragon beating up that giant golem was also really good.
It was pretty sweet. Is me or has she gotten like more muscly as a dragon? I don't know. The limbs seem really long and stuff.
Don't know. It's been a while since she's changed into one, so.
Yeah.
It's probably the most extended period we've seen of her in that form, so maybe getting more detail than you would before.
It was just a whirling ball of destruction nearly in the prior episode.
Yeah, and the face does a good job of kind of both seeming like Nina and also seeming like some sort of really dangerous monster.
There was a really nice thing of that where the king's looking at her and the dragon, Nina as a dragon is looking at him and her eye blinks, but it has like the eyelashes and it looks like Nina somehow. It was very good. Yeah.
Right, on to Dragon Ball Super, episode 97. Survive, the Tournament of Power begins at last. Well, the first minute of it.
I fucking love that. It makes you go, wait a minute. Is it going to be like a minute per episode? Or
2 minutes, probably. 2 minutes, because this wasn't the entire episode, was that minute. There was a bit.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. That's still a lot of episodes, though.
We got some names of some more people. As they were knocked out.
Yeah.
Maybe that's how we're going to get the names.
Quite possibly.
As they fall out of the ring.
Lilibo from Universe 10 is the first one out when she's eliminated by Basil.
Yep. Who uses the same animation 3 times in this episode.
Oh, yeah. That's rough. It was pretty rough.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
There's a couple of instances of that, but that was the most egregious one, yeah.
Yeah, I hadn't realised she's like the character Yadamon. Her fairy wings are coming out of her hair rather than out of her back.
Oh, yeah, it's only clear when she's sitting down. Yeah, yeah.
And then later on, eliminated by Goku is... What's the weirdo's name?
Oh, fuck, I've forgotten his name.
Yeah, I've written it down.
Orc.
The orc-looking dude.
Is it Dink or something? Nink. Nink.
I think it's Nink.
That's,
yeah.
Yes, it's Nink.
I did like his thing of, like, he was all extreme. He's like, I'm taking you with me. And he kind of falls over the edge. And as soon as he, like, lands, he's just like, well, plan failed.
He had a great stupid voice.
Yeah. It kind of went straight into it, which was nice, that it was just explosions everywhere. The only guys who didn't get stuck in initially were like Team 7, who,
yes,
as soon as Gohan said the magic words of, we have to work together, everyone who wouldn't work together fucks off on their own.
Which is, yeah, Goku, Vegeta, Frieza, Android 18, and Android 17.
Yeah.
Yeah. 18 and 17 are doing all right. Vegeta is punching the same big blue rock guy in both times we see him. We'll see how that works out for him.
Mm.
Frieza's just kind of capping dudes, it seems like. And,
yeah, just running around randomly shooting guys.
And Goku keeps trying to fight Toppo, but he seems to have enough trouble with like the goggle boy from Universe 4.
Yeah, other people keep getting involved in the fight. That seems to be his trouble.
Nobody seems to want to fight Jiren except for Goku, but Goku can't get close enough. Everyone's just sort of backing away. Jiren's just like standing perfectly stock still.
Yeah, one guy walks up to Jiren and is like, ha! And he's like, okay, I'm fucking off this way.
maybe that's his real power, that no one's actually fought him. He just looks very strong. So if he's just gotten this far on reputation and kind of imposing presence alone.
Well, like your man in Cromarty, it's like, well, I think that's fine. Yeah.
They could go down in one punch from Krillin.
So go ahead, yeah.
You're going to say they're like the remaining five sensible people having a hard time of it.
Yeah, back to back, but everyone's kind of ganging up on them. Many different universes, yeah.
Like, they do all the signature moves, and it's like, yeah, I blew them all away. But the dust clears, and Austin's standing there and scratched on them. And it's like,
yeah,
fuck.
See, Piccolo was doing like special beam cannon, Krillin's doing Destructo Disc and shit. And I'm like, those are killer moves, guys. Be very careful. And I was like, oh, they're fine. Never mind.
I must have missed. I don't know. Because I didn't ever get chopped in half there.
Yeah.
We also get Roshi saying, leave the women fighters to me. And they're like, are you sure?
That seems like a bad idea, Master Roshi. But I'm guessing his plan is to just perv on them in order to get them out of the ring.
Oh, no, he's cured himself of that. We saw it in the previous episode, so that's definitely not going to backfire on him. It's definitely not going to make Kale go Super Saiyan and beat shit out of him, which I really hope to happen.
That's excellent, actually, because I was wondering how, because she seems super nervous and obviously, not Kaba, Cauliflower giving out to her. And I was like, what's going to make her turn? And I was like, Master Roshi, that's a perfect way to do it, dude.
Robots, Universe 3, are designed to not be able to be thrown out of the arena, just gets killed by Basil and hit, basically break its arms so it can't do its...
It had the excellent, ingenious idea of spinning around really fast and just hitting people with its arms.
Yeah, just after the Kai and Mosca had been gloating about how great this design was.
So I'm guessing their thing is their guys are very good at one thing, and as soon as that's fucked up, they're like, oh, fuck, we didn't have a plan B for this.
I can't remember what Quaitella's like giving out, trying to raise Beerus's hackles.
Like, Beerus says, like, come on, Team 7, work together. Beerus is just like, hey, everyone, get Universe 7, get him. Like, it's not even very clever. It's just very, very childish. Dear.
Yeah, but apparently he's the one other god of destruction who really gets on Beerus's nerves. Possibly by the end of this, everybody's nerves, I suspect, because when we see Nink get eliminated on the god pads that the kids are filling in as their fighters get eliminated.
Now, children, take out your god pads. So I was like, let me see. Universe 2? No, 3. Okay. And let me do the next one. All right.
I don't know about giving like complicated electronics to such young masters of all creation, and it's probably not good for the development.
Again, I think that's another part of parent, this appealing to parents, because parents are like, oh yeah, nowadays gotta give the kids the iPads to stop them being distracted.
I did like
stop them from erasing all existence.
Yeah.
I did like the thing of when your one fell off, she gets falling into darker and darker, and then she just appears on the stadium,
yes.
the seats. And it's like, okay, so she's fine. But I'm worried about that one big button on the God pad where it's like, okay, once you knock off all the guys, once you cross them all off, erase the universe. That's what I'm worried that button does.
Well, looking by the looks of the preview, they seem to be teasing that happening next week.
Yes.
Specifically to Universe 9.
Universe 7, gone. Whoa! That came out of left field.
Yeah, because it looks like Universe 9 going after Goku at the end of this. He's surrounded by like five of them, I think. And he's like, he's gleefully saying, oh. And meanwhile, Vegeta's fighting the Rock Man from Universe 9.
Mm. Yeah. Well, when Goku is beating the shit out of Bergamo.
Yeah, and the preview makes it sound like Universe 9 are not long for this existence.
They are supposed to be the weakest, so I guess that wouldn't
be... Well, no, Universe 7 is supposed to be the weakest.
Oh, really?
The weakest universe.
Oh, I see, yeah.
Yeah. But they might be the weakest fighters. And the most useless Kai in God of Destruction. Maybe not the most useless Kai, but probably the most useless God of Destruction. Like, the argument would be Universe 7's Kais are the most useless. Because they...
Well, if your man can do a dance around you for, what is it, fucking 3 weeks or something ridiculous, then you're getting stronger.
But, yeah, as you say, there's lots of repeated loops of animation, which I'm sure we'll become very familiar with over the coming weeks.
Yeah, it's kind of fun to talk about in retrospect, kind of in a moment. I was like going, this isn't like the rip-roaring star at all was going to be, you know?
But yeah, I think that's the nature of having 80 people in a fight and on a Toei schedule.
I guess, yeah. Well, maybe as the winter went down, maybe get a bit more kind of, a bit more in-depth strategy. Well, I thought, but like, no, with that way kind of fighters in there to be kind of a lot more kind of team maneuvers going on. Maybe we'll see more of that when we get further into it.
Hopefully. I did notice on the team that appears to have two guys missing, they did have those sections on the god pads
were still
lit up or whatever. So there's definitely like invisible or tiny people involved or something.
See, I think tiny people would be a really good way of winning it.
Yeah.
Or at least getting down to the final few. I don't know what happens if there's a time...
Because all you gotta do is stay on the field, and if they can't fucking see you...
Yeah, so is the time limit like, if you're still in the arena when the time limit is over, it's just whoever's got the most people in there? And if that's a draw...
I think it might be an elimination.
Eliminated the most, yeah. I don't know.
I hope it isn't some crap like, no, the other fighters are the alternate personalities of these two guys. It's like, that's fucking hacky as all get out.
I don't think so, though. Because one of them apparently
I some kind of like germ fighter. He's just going to kind of microbe. He's just like in a jar there in the field, yeah.
And then finally, the best thing this week.
Yep.
Without a doubt, Tiger Mask Double, Episode 38, Masked Tiger Springer.
So, right, is this the best Victory Lap episode?
I think it might be, yes.
Because, I was thinking, I expected it to be funny. I didn't expect it to look so goddamn good.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, that helps, you know, it's kind of like, no, you just tend to kind of do this, you know, when they have an episode like this, when we got after the big climax, but it's like, well, now we just kind of cut loose and do everything we kind of wanted to. But when we got nothing to fulfill here, let's just do it as you'd like it. Because most people have come, they've seen Tiger Mask, you know, beat the big bad guy in the previous episode, and you know everyone gets their happy ending or close to anyway. So now we can just stick around for a while and just.
I would love to watch the pitch that this new show is kind of pitching, but they're trying to set up the women's wrestling league and are very bad at it.
Well, it's almost like anime about, you know, like a separate club with all girls doing, I don't know, motorbike racing or starting a band, or just lots of kind of
No, I know there's that kind of show, but I want to see this specific show. I want to see the, oh shit, it's still GWM, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Girls Wrestling Movement, I think that's what they call it.
Yes, I think that's it. I was trying to remember what it stood for, but, yeah, because yeah, well, she held on to the copyright for the logo.
Yeah, that's all. Well, that show came out, Glow, didn't it? That's like, Ray's Wrestling.
Oh.
Watch that.
Yeah. But yeah, this does feel like a, I can't remember what the words for it, but basically when you put a pilot for another show inside another show's episodes.
When you sneak a pilot in.
Yeah. Yeah, cause the obviously it's the look of it is very different to the previous 37 episodes.
Yes.
It's not trying to do the fake, 1960s line weight.
Yeah, the previous animation and for most of it.
Kodai Watanabe is apparently the person mostly responsible for the look of this episode. Who have worked on this, Dragon Ball Super, Dragon Ball Z Resurrection F, Monster Design on Dryland, Kyosugiga, and a lot of that was... The biggest thing on Anime News Network is that One Piece TV movie from a few years back. 3D2Y. Okay. The character designer, chief animation director on that as well. Basically the crux of this is that the Tigers have gone off to Mexico in America. And so Haruna's left with a sort of,
Well, she's a manager of nobody, right?
A manager of nobody, yes. So Miss X approaches her, asking her if she'd join this. She wants to still be a professional wrestler because she's got this other project, GWM, that she's starting up. And so, yeah, she's going to join. Then they go through. It's her, Mint, and Milk, the people they've got on board.
Yeah, they're only wrestlers at the moment. It's a small stable.
And they explain the four S's of modern day women's wrestling.
Using handy dandy clips of
Takuma and Kevin.
Frolic on the beach.
Frolicking on the beach like at the end of Rocky, enjoying their cell phones together. Or is it drinks or cell phones? I think it's cell phones.
It's cell phones.
They kind of go cheers with them.
Yeah, because isn't like SMS or social media is like one of the thing, the S's. And singing. I can't remember what the other two ones were, but.
Smile was one. Yes. Smile was the first one. Smile, sing, SMS, and, what was the last one? Because that one didn't have a Takuma Kevin one, so I can't remember what the picture was.
I thought singing was the last one.
You're probably right. Yeah.
Anyways,
so they're going to bring in definitely not Charlotte Flair and definitely not Becky Lynch from GWM.
Oh, right, yeah.
But then they need somebody else, and they're going to bring in... So they have this press conference where they bring in... what's her name? I want to call her Devil Masami.
Devil Mama?
Mother Devil.
Mother Devil.
That's who she's based... Yeah, she's based on Devil Masami. Mm. And who is a giant woman in comparison to these tiny women.
Yeah.
And she gets in Spring Tiger's face, or she's now going to be called Springer because Spring Tiger's too long a name.
It's like one syllable.
And challenges her to a mask match, and to which
it's like if you want to be a real wrestler, little girl, you should put your mask on the line. And what's she say? Something like,
I'd rather show you my bum than show my face.
It's like, okay,
it's on now. Wait, no. Sorry, you said it out loud at a press conference, so it has to happen.
And then the rules of wrestling.
And then other wrestlers they had lined up start dropping out because they don't want to be associated with a company who will do bum angles.
They nearly lost their the place that they'd booked because it was like, you're not going to show your bum in our place, right? Because that'll be like, you know, really bad for us. I was like, don't worry, there'll be no bum. See, Haruna, you have to win.
but the whole bum angle, then it packed the crowd in. They all want to see this.
It's both good and bad for their first show.
Yeah, because the great shot of the when they say announce the bum angle is it then cuts to just the men in the press crowd who all look like creeps with glasses adjusting their glasses in excitement.
Yeah. Oh, and obviously, Haruna like relishes the fact that a bunch of wrestlers are pulling out. It's like, oh, I guess we're going to need that mystery wrestler. What was her name? X something.
X-Woman.
That's the one. And he was like, oh, please, no, I don't want to wrestle again. I got my butt so handed to me.
By you.
Yeah. That seems to be a permanent fucking injury she has based off her, how her match goes. Oh, dear.
And we also learn her name is Sandra.
Yeah, in a nice kind of like heart she has with her.
Yes, you can stop calling me Miss X.
That's not my name. That's just what sounds good for the press. Yeah. Sandra.
But also, what's her face? The red-haired woman's still working.
The secretary.
Yes. Who has a great recurring bit in this episode of just like sweeping in through through a door to give bad news to people.
Leaning in to just fucking ruin people's fucking day. And then her thing is like, they're like, why the fuck did you leave? Wasn't like Mr. X your uncle or something? And it's like, oh, I'm, you know, breaking out on my own in the world. It's as much explanation as she gives. The standard thing of her, like not giving enough explanation. But that is a pretty great bit as well.
We see Takuma and Odin watching it on a tablet.
See Odin in his bar. Or his local bar, yeah.
It's just one. It's like they're there on their biker letter, I know, one slamming down like, you know, massive pints of beer, and it's like I'm just watching it on a tiny little phone.
on his iPad or on his phone. I mean, like, it could be an iPad in his hands. They are fucking massive.
And now he's watching on his phone.
Yeah. But in between joggings and shit.
And there's a bit about her not wanting, she's told her uncle and her mum that she's going to work for New Japan. But then after.
As a promotion thing,
But then after the show, after she beats Devil Mama or Mother Devil by hitting her in the face with her ass.
Because she's asking Takuma, it's like, can you help me come up with a signature move? It's like, I'm really bad at this, you know this.
And there's a flashback to all the time she kicked him.
It's like, yeah, those really hurt. You're good at kicking. Do a kick. I don't know. And she messed up the kick and hits her in the face with her butt, which, as Miss X points out, that is one of the largest bones in the body. Yeah. So.
it's like Rainbow Amika in Street Fighter.
Yeah, no, it's a standard ladies wrestling move. I'm not fucking denying that.
It's also, you did see Ryusuke Taguchi matches in New Japan because he...
Right, okay.
His nickname is the Funky Weapon, and the Funky Weapon is his ass. To the extent in the one of the matches in Best of the Super Juniors this year, one of the heel wrestlers spent the match working over his ass so he wouldn't be able to use his ass as a weapon against him.
Oh, Jesus, that's brilliant.
Yeah, but it's a powerful technique, no? Because I've seen all the Keijo. I know that if you get good enough, you can do a Hadouken with that thing. So
that's right. Yeah.
So watch out.
Oh yeah, when Mint comes in the office as well, she immediately just lunges for Haruna's abs to give them a feel again.
Feeling good. I mean,
like, to be fair, that is like for the creepos out there, that is off screen. And it's like, oh wow, you still got those great abs, that kind of thing. And just Miss X kind of exasperated. It's like, yep, get on with it. You got business to do. Wrestle business.
There's creepy comments from the audience during the show as well.
It's both creepy and like kind of trying to ruin her fucking mood, where it's like, you know, it's like, oh well, she's gonna lose, but at least I'll get to see her bum.
Yes,
that kind of thing.
But the female voices are giving her support.
Of course
the male voices being creeps. And then at the end, after she's won, she does her speech thanking everybody for turning up, thanking New Japan for lending referees in the ring. And then she's going to sing a song, but they've got to leave because they've only booked the hall for this longer time and they don't want to overrun.
Yeah, we need to clean up, otherwise we'll be going overtime. Got to pay more.
But despite that, she's resolved to tell her uncle and her mum what she's doing and go her own way. Which hopefully, we'd hope this is popular enough to do another series, because I've definitely watched 13 episodes of this.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. I can't decide if, like, this is a better ending than last week's one. And last week's one was pretty good because it wrapped everything up nicely.
Both are good.
I say ending both are good. Because this
ending
one...
Ending and then a second ending. Yeah, yeah.
This one gave us the modern version of Mr. No, who we didn't get in the previous 37 episodes.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah. Because he's randomly wrestling as Tiger Mask double at the end.
Yes.
Mm.
Oh, right.
Yes, he's with different color to the original Mr. No, so he doesn't look quite so much like a penis.
Probably for the best.
But yeah, that was a, as you say, a great encore.
Mm.
And now hopefully all the great animators have been working on this and are now freed up to go and do some more Dragon Ball stuff.
Just in time, probably, yeah.
Well, yeah, I saw a compilation video last week someone had done of the guy did a lot of the stuff on last week's episode, and they've done a lot of the stuff we've liked on Dragon Ball Super already.
Okay, right.
Uh-huh.
So, and stuff which we've seen in the opening credits but hasn't actually happened in the episode yet. So presumably they'll reuse that footage in the actual episode because it looks really good.
Mm.
Right, is there anything next week we are able to watch and we want to watch?
Nothing we want to see.
I mean, like, we could dip into something that are just going to be horrible just for the sheer horror of it.
I think I'm not sure there's anything super horrible either. I think there's a lot of...
Just bland, isn't it?
It's always a middling.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like you can't even muster the fucking enthusiasm to even hate them.
Okay.
Not saying to be bad. Maybe it could be some kind of good offender that, no, of course, we've gotten caught by surprise before.
Sure.
Yeah, but I think this is like the brave new world we live in where Megacorp sort of hoovering up all the anime and
well,
get away from
it's
people.
It's the weird thing, though. I think we'll see some stuff which is on Anime Strike will be on High Dive in the UK.
That has happened already.
It has, yes. Because it's Sentai stuff, and that's Sentai's output will go on there, I imagine, for the UK. Until they sort out a channel on Anime Prime, because they've now got channels on Anime Prime UK as well. So eventually you may see Anime Strike on there, I guess. But also, Amazon kind of can't work in unison across different countries, so it could be that Anime UK, the Amazon UK aren't really interested in Anime Strike moving their anime stuff into its own separate channel.
Hmm.
We shall see.
Yeah. I was getting fucking crushed then, seeing that there was fucking absolutely gorgeous opening to Kakegurui doing around, so I thought, look forward to seeing that next year. Looks really good.
Okay, so these things we got. Centaur's Worries, no.
Yeah.
I think Princess Principal, is that on?
That's a High Dive thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it will be something or other. I think a lot of these stuff are, I think everything I wanted to watch is going to be on Anime Strike, so it's a question of where it's going to be in the UK. And there's been announced so far. There's still a bunch of stuff after this next week coming up that I want to check out. You've got the Vatican thing that's on Anime Strike in the US. Who knows where it is? Do we know where Made in Abyss is? Is that also?
That might be High Dive.
Okay.
I read these things a few days ago.
Oh, here we go. High Dive reveals streaming territories, debut dates for Battle Girl High School, Made in Abyss. Okay. Well, I might check out High Dive just to see what it's like. And also because it's a Patreon type pricing rather than Netflix type pricing, isn't it?
Right.
Is there anything else? Oh, Crunchyroll have got that romantic gag anime by Anime's Chief Pervert, but the trailers didn't make it look very good.
I mean, like that doesn't really sell it to me either.
I mean. But it's not as far as I know perverted. It was just, he seemed like a weird, he's a good director, but a massive pervert. It seemed like a weird choice for him to be doing that and not something massively perverted. there's that thing about the restaurant, which every Saturday or Sunday or something goes into a Dungeons and Dragons world, so monsters can come and eat Earth cuisine. That's on Crunchyroll. That thing about the Neat Freak footballer. I started watching that. The animation is not very good, as I suspected.
Yeah, I kind of like the idea of it, but it's not very appealing otherwise.
Yeah, that yokai apartment didn't look very good, and looks like it's got middling reviews as well. Yeah, that's it. And there doesn't seem to be much coming up this week, apart from Welcome to the Ballroom, which I think I'll be able to watch, but you guys won't.
Well, technically, I also
technically, technically you can't watch Ranger Barber, yeah, exactly.
Somehow I always do.
Somehow, magically managed to do it.
Because we need to, for the podcast.
Yes.
It's necessary.
I mean, yeah, otherwise it's watch a load of Bono Bono, start watching Yu-Gi-Oh! Brains.
Amazon buys license for Bono Bono. No!
yeah, the only other things I'm watching are Case Closed and One Piece. And even then I only watched it because I was like, oh, I can get to hear Frieza talk in two different programs, and then Frieza didn't say a single word in Dragon Ball Super this week.
maybe you'll get three Friezas the next week.
We might even have to go back to Bort at this rate. No, we won't.
Bort!
Righty-ho. What's coming up on Secret of the Sailor Madness, guys?
It's finally happening. Secret of the Madness. Number 150. Quite a milestone. And quite the milestone topic. It'll be Justice League, the first... Up until it became unlimited, so, you know, everything that has
Justice
the original. League.
Just it, yeah.
The seven guys having adventures, beating up villains across time and space. That'll be with our special guest, Martin Schneider. Mm-hmm. And after that, we will probably be doing another, pilot potluck episode. So we'll be looking at some weird animation pilots that are either ready to be new and kind of gauging their chances of getting made. Or look at some older ones, and that may not have happened at all. I'm kind of wondering why that may be.
Hmm.
So, yeah, look forward to those two things.
Right, on Dynamite in the Brain, we'll have just released that Ganso episode. Then next week, there may or may not be an episode.
Oh.
It's a mystery. It depends whether I decide to... If I put out an episode, it may not be on the... feed, you may have to go to the website to download it. Because it may be the missing episode of Dynamite in the Brain that I finally release. No one knows what that's about. He was on it.
Well, you could put the video version down. Like, wasn't that animated by...
No, it was never animated. That's what I was holding off. But no, it never got finished because obviously he'd got paying jobs to do.
Fine,
yes. So it's been long enough. It's an episode for a year I didn't want to release because I thought it was the worst thing we'd ever recorded. Anthony says, no, it's fine, you can release it. Then I edited it into an episode and gave it to Aaron and Anthony to listen to. Aaron found it funny and thought about animating a portion of it. Anthony then said, don't release it, it's terrible. And then I turned around and I was like, oh, it's nowhere near as bad as I remember it being on the day we recorded it. Yes, and it hasn't appeared since then. So it may appear next week, but if it does, it'll be a website-only exclusive. It won't be on the feed.
Ooh.
And then after that, we'll be back with Little Witch Academia, with Niall and Dwayne.
Yay!
Yep.
Woohoo!
The first 13 episodes, though, because that's all there is to watch on Netflix at the moment.
You mean season one?
Oh, of course. Yes. And then after that, I'm waiting to see whether Anthony can go and see Genocidal Organ, and then we'll probably do a podcast about that as well. Because that's out on July the 12th for one day, and only in the evenings around 7:30 or 8. I can make it. The question is if Anthony can make it. And I don't think neither of us particularly want to go to it, so we probably won't go and see it.
The suspense builds.
Ooh. It does, yes. Right, otherwise we'll be back next week with even less of Let's Go.
But the same top quality content.
Right. Yeah, see you then. Goodbye.
Bye.
Adios.